are tuned into the Atlanta Life Radio Station, WALR, bringing you the best in talk radio with shows that cover topics to feed your mind, body, and soul. And now we present Let's Talk, Going Gym Free radio show with your host, Mark Prescott, and co-host Beth Sims, and tonight's special guest, Dr. Scott Clitheroe. So let's get this conversation started. Join me in a virtual applause as we welcome Mark and Beth on air.
Oh, welcome back for a second helping of the show. Beth, how are you doing? Where are you? You're in Texas today. What's going on with you?
I am. I love that virtual applause. That makes me giggle every time I hear it, but I love it.
I was thinking, and we said this in the first week, we talked about the music. For my workouts, I would say that I need to get more music. Like, I need a total music makeover. I am stuck in the 80s on my walks. Luckily, I cut my mullet off a few years back, but I still have the Hall & Oates and the Aerosmith and Kansas and Journey, so I need to step up my game a little bit. You're kind of more hip to the music, right?
It's just what I like, what I'm in the mood for. I love kind of dance, upbeat, tech music, and kind of the with the loud beats, and yeah, that's my kind of thing. That's what I exercise to. I can actually put on music, be in my living room, and just like break out in a dance if it's a good song. So, 80s, Mark, dude. 80.
I'm telling you, it's brutal. It's brutal, but I've been able to power through it. I think, you know what, I kind of think it's I'm a little lazy in changing my music over, but, maybe my taste isn't very good. Maybe my taste isn't very good either. Don't you think music is huge for working out, though? Or would you say that's a big thing for you, music?
You know what? This is not a lie, no joke. There have been times if I forget my iPod, like at home, I will turn around, go home, and get it. No joke. I can't exercise without music, unless it's like yoga or something like that. But absolutely, if it's tunes are everything for me, motivates me big time. So, yeah, and I'm going to help you with some new music to turn over at least Paul & Oates. 80s, oh my gosh, I'm going to be nightmares about that tonight.
I have some of my music dripped into the 90s, so you got to get off my back a little bit. I got some in the 90s.
Okay.
Hey, we want to talk to some of our listeners right now. I know the weather, I know Beth, you're in Texas, and so we want to keep people safe out there. The weather, I don't know if where it is where you are, but I know at our headquarters in Georgia, the weather's pretty bad. So hopefully everybody's staying safe out there. So we're thinking about safety and all that. So this might not be the best time for that outdoor evening run if you're listening to us in Georgia or in the South or in a lot of portions of the country. It's pretty bad. Is it bad where you are too?
You know, it's windy. It's all get out. Yesterday was kind of bad, but let me tell you, yesterday I felt like I was Dorothy's twin sister because oh my gosh, it was so windy, literally. But it's so much better today. It's a beautiful day.
Yeah, so everybody stay safe. We got a pretty cool show today. We're going to take calls, and we have a special guest coming up here in a little bit. Now, one of the topics we're going to get to today is telemedicine and more wellness. Obviously, there's so many directions we can go in wellness, but one of the topics we're going to cover today, and Beth, you would know this really well too, and I really got a handle on it when I spent a lot of time filming TV shows in hospitals. Is the right things to ask your doctor in kind of that routine yearly, where you go in there and you've got the anxiety and you feel pretty good and you realize that you only have about 3 to 5 minutes to talk to your doctor, and then you walk out the door and you're like, oh man, I forgot to ask him about this and that. So this is a huge one. It's a big topic. I know our guest Scott today is going to touch on that a little bit, but you probably find that a pretty big problem as well too, right, with people you deal with?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I know for a fact. I mean, I talked to somebody today that wants to quit smoking, And it's just a vote. And then he called me right back. He was like, oh, and I want to do this. I hope I'm not taking up too much of your time. So, yeah, absolutely. People are really passionate about their health. And, you know, so you grab that and you take it. And sometimes you just don't have that time with a doctor like you want. So that's a great point.
Or when you do have the time, if by chance the doctor or the nurse says, do you have any other questions? And you just say no, and you go on your way, and then the window kind of closes. So we're gonna talk to Dr. Clitheroe about that in a little bit, and try to cover some other ground today as well. I've already seen some emails pouring in that we're gonna get to in the second half hour. So. Pretty packed show for people that are just joining us. This is week two of the show, and we want to thank all the support we had in week one. We like to call this, Beth, I don't know if you like this name, but I do. We like to call this our virtual wellness cafe. So if you're like me, Beth, I know you're more of a tea person, but the thought of sitting back and having a cup of coffee and talking about things is cool for me, and we'll set you up with what? What do you like? One of those chai tea types of
I do. Drink? I do. I think I told you that earlier. Like when I'm not a big tea or coffee drinker, but if chai tea is amazing, and I call it Christmas in a cup. It just smells so good and yummy, and it's not very healthy, but it's good. So you can get me one of those.
You're from the Midwest, so you probably like a hearty hot chocolate or something like that, right? Is that the drink of choice from Indiana?
Yes. You know, I want to say yes because you asked me that, but no, I don't. I don't drink hot chocolate either. I'm a nerd. I don't know. I like water and an energy drink every once in a while. And no, I'm boring with my drink selections, I guess.
That's all right. I'm gonna. You know what? You can work with me on the music part of the working out, and then when it comes to the virtual cafe, I'm gonna work with you on drinking cocoa and coffee. So, yeah, but not too much. You know, not too much coffee, not too much cocoa, because there's sugar, caffeine, and all of that stuff.
Right.
Well, let's just do it. You know what? I think that Dr. Clitheroe is around now. So let's get Dr. Clitheroe on the line right now.
Great.
And we are rolling along on a Wednesday going gym free. I am your host, Mark Prescott, alongside Beth Sims. A little bit after 4 o'clock here on the West Coast, we have a special guest with us today, a man who really needs no introduction, although I'm going to give him one anyway. His name is Dr. Scott Clitheroe. Dr. Clitheroe, how are you doing? Can we call you Scott, or should we keep this formal? You tell me.
Oh, please call me Scott. I'm doing great, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. I want to let people know if they have an email or if they want to call in, I want to run that down real quick. It's goinggymfree@gmail.com, or if you want to call in, 347-324-5246. Also, follow us on Twitter at ALR Radio. Also, check out the website, AtlantaLifeRadio.com. So, Scott, what's going on with you, man? What are you doing lately? I know you're a man of many talents in the healthcare field, and you spread yourself kind of thin, but you've been successful along many platforms. Kind of give our viewers kind of a glimpse into what you're doing now.
Well, Mark, I'm an internal medicine physician, and I, for many years here in Austin, Texas, was a hospitalist, which is a hospital-based physician who takes care of hospitalized patients, and so I took care of real sick people, mostly in the hospital, but I think just because of the way I'm wired and because of what I saw, I just developed a great interest in trying to, you know, prevent that very situation, you know, trying to keep people healthy and out of the hospital, which is somewhat counterintuitive, but I just knew that kind of deep down that was the right way to go for, you know, the health of my patients and really the health of the community. So I did that up until about 3 or 4 years ago. Then I had an opportunity to do some other things, and one of those included becoming the medical director of a telemedicine company called US Telehealth, and we provide health care for patients who are in remote areas. Specifically right now, we're taking care of quite a few folks out in the Gulf of Mexico on oil platforms and other places where their occupation has taken them to remote areas where they can't have access to physicians, you know, somewhat readily. So and then that's how I met Beth, and Beth and I have somewhat teamed up to try and spread the wellness idea to these folks and really trying to get them excited about their health in a way that hopefully will prevent them from needing our services down the road in a more acute setting.
So, Scott, as a doctor, have you seen a trend, let's say in the past 10, 15 years, when it comes to patients' health in regards to lifestyle and behavior?
Well, I mean, certainly the internet, you know, Beth, and social media has been, I think, wonderful. I mean, I think, you know, information is power, and certainly there can be too much information and conflicting information, but I think it's just been fantastic that patients have ready access to information outside of their doctor's purview. I think that, you know, those who are interested in it and even those that aren't just get inundated with information and, you know, most of it good. I think that, you know, there's just so much information out there about the way diet especially affects our health and how, you know, things that we've taken for granted maybe 20, 30 years ago are not quite so, you know, truthful, if that's the right word. And so I think in my mind it's just that maybe it's just because I practice in Austin. You know, we have a very educated population here, very motivated for health. That people just have an access and an interest to a lot of health information.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting, Scott, because one of the things that I'm passionate about, and I think I can speak for Beth on this topic a lot, is prevention and lifestyle management. You must deal with a number of patients that maybe are just starting at just ground zero and need so much help and kind of that gentle push to get things going and get back on the right track as far as health and wellness. How do you move the needle when it comes to lifestyle management and prevention, especially when, you know, there can be so much pushback with that? How do you deal with that?
Well, you know, it's funny. Fear sometimes obviously is a great motivation in all of our lives in different areas, you know, whether it comes to health or finances and things like that. But, you know, what I found is that for every patient I saw in my career as a hospitalist and intensive care, you know, kind of medicine doctor, you know, there were certainly cases of people who came in with a heart attack or stroke or what have you that they finally got that big, you know, wake-up call. Man, I got it. Okay, you know. The cat's out of the bag, but they're telling me that I can still live a pretty healthy, productive life if I just get my act together. And that is a great motivator, obviously, when you've had to face those fluorescent lights of an ER and meet a bunch of strangers who've got needles and things like that. And that certainly works for some, but on the other hand, it's amazing how many folks don't get it. I mean, they don't still, that type of episode doesn't change their behavior. In fact, there's a great story that I love to tell where this is a true story. A guy was waiting to go home after having come in with a heart attack and the cardiologist, you know, stented one of his arteries and we, you know, got him on the right appropriate medications, including Lipitor and whatnot for his cholesterol. And, you know, we were busy that morning and we got there and he was upset because he was going to miss lunch at a local well-known barbecue joint. Because he was from out of town and it was
right.
A great opportunity for him to go and slather some brisket, you know, and I just looked at him and I said, you know, you don't get it. You know, that's the old way of your life. And he didn't get it. And you know, certainly we see those folks who still smoke. So the answer to your question is, I think, fear. But also, again, I think now I'm so interested in just getting people to just have a conversation with me or with somebody like Beth and just, you know, give and take. And what I'm really passionate about in healthcare, and hopefully it'll change in our lifetime, and I think it will, is just giving physicians and mid-level providers and folks like Beth the access and the time to sit down and have a give and take with people. Because I really do think if you can educate folks and listen to their certain issues and go back and forth with them, you can get them on a path. And it may not be easy and it may not have detours, but get them on a path to health. And so I really think that it takes time and interest and education and also a kind of a back and forth dialogue with folks to find what's right for them. So I'm interested in the fear factor, which works for some people, and then just the access time factor. And then lastly, I'm fascinated with the financial incentives of, you know, maybe someday we go to a healthcare system where it's a very high deductible and say, look, people, okay, you save money if you keep yourself healthy, you know, and let's see if we can do that. And so anyway, those are the kind of things I'm interested in. But I think overall, though, we're seeing more of an interest from most folks in their health, and I think that's just a wonderful thing.
So do you see a difference, folks in Texas eating their barbecue and folks out in the Gulf of Mexico. I mean, do you see different risk factors for demographics, or is it about the same for everybody?
Well, I think that's a great question, Beth. I mean, yeah, I think, you know, any part of the country has their own, you know, temptations, if you will. But, yeah, you know, I have a lot of folks out in the Gulf of Mexico who are from Louisiana. You know, we see them, and, you know, they are very proud of their heritage and their culture, and understandably so. It's a wonderful place, but so much embedded in that lifestyle and that culture of especially southern Louisiana is that Cajun cooking, which involves, you know, very rich foods and fried foods. And they actually, you know, I've heard it many times where it's, well, doctor, you know, I'm Cajun, or I'm from southern Louisiana, and that's just, it's almost like it's off the table. Let's talk about something else, but I'm not going to change my diet, you know, and lifestyle. And I come back, you know, and I know you have too, where, okay, well, we hear that, but there's still ways you can honor that culture and honor that lifestyle and still stay healthy. And we do the same thing here with, you know, with the Mexican-American, the Latino population, and the Texas population. Now, we can still honor our heritage and our culture and our history, but still do it in a way that honors our health and our body too. So, but yeah, we see that a lot.
Sure. That just blows me away when people refuse to alter those long life health habits. That just blows me away.
Yeah. Well, you sure. And again, it's a comfort thing. You know, there's a comfort in familiarity, and there's a comfort in sitting down with your family and maybe your parents or your grandparents and having that, you know, fried crawfish, you know, or something. And, you know, that's really something to be said. And that's what I often say to people is, look, in all things moderation, you know, how about let's, you know, reward yourself for a week or a month of good health choices, and then, you know, one time have that blowout, you know, fun, then you're not doing damage, but it's the everyday thing, or the, you know, so sometimes you can find a compromise for folks, you know, and that sometimes works, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Do you find, Scott, that sometimes, I mean, and you kind of touched on it here with the whole moderation thing, but one of the things that I like to talk about with people, and maybe you find this frustrating or maybe you don't, but what about the common sense factor? What about telling somebody, hey, let's substitute a Coke for a bottled water. Let's walk for 15 minutes. Let's not eat too much before we go to bed. Let's get a little more sleep. Do you find that trying to maybe break that barrier is a tough thing too? I know you mentioned moderation, but that one to me, you know, there's probably 5, 6, 10, 15 things of just common sense that people should know. Is that a frustrating thing to try to get some of those simple points across?
It is, Mark, and that's a great way to put it. It's you know, in moderation and choices. And I think I touched on it earlier too. It's just that I really, if you just have a dialogue with folks and stop, you know, we like some doctors come in and kind of preach, you know, and not teach. And, you know, I think that I certainly, and my manner with folks is to commiserate with them and to certainly say, look, you know, I face the same battles you do. We certainly all do. We all like, you know, we all have our things that we like to do that maybe we know may not be good for us. So I just said, you know, let's try and pick one thing and just really work on that. And, you know, and if you aren't successful, if you do grab that Coke instead of that water or, you know, whatever, don't beat yourself up about it. Just, you know, okay, learn, you know, what trigger started that and then move on, you know. And again, that comes back to the fact that I think it's just time. I mean, I really think that the way our healthcare system in this country is not conducive to good primary care, wellness, coaching, and education because of the six-minute visit. The hand on the doorknob, you look good, I'll talk to you later. You know, that you know, we're doctors and mid-level, some of them aren't, you know, really spending the time with the patients because of financial considerations, which somewhat are out of their control. But I really find that to be one of the things. And, you know, you can't change everybody, but and certainly doctors have different styles, but I just feel like, you know, we need to be part of that solution of prevention, you know, because right now the healthcare system is kind of more reactionary still. It's getting better, but it's still, okay, let's wait till the thing happens like a stroke or heart attack, and then let's, you know, get in some very expensive talent. Let's get, you know, go to the very expensive hospital. Let's use some very expensive drugs, you know, whereas if we spend a little more time on the front side, we could prevent that from happening in certain cases. So, yeah.
You know, I've seen you, I've known you for a long time, and I've actually seen you with patients, and you really, I mean, you have set the bar high because I know you talk to patients and clients about their wellness, where maybe some physicians don't. But I know for a fact you talk about diet and fitness and stress and the importance of quitting smoking if they have that habit. And I'm just kudos to you. That's amazing. I'm glad to see that. Well, I'd like to see more physicians do that.
Well, Beth, that's very kind. Thank you. Well, again, that's just my passion. But I do think that part of it is just, again, what we're trying to set up with this telemedicine company, really. But even, you know, I kind of do it even in the hospital, which I still do from time to time. I just feel like it's a blessing to be a physician. It's just such a wonderful thing to be able to do. And I don't take it lightly. And, you know, human beings are just trips. You know, we're all just fascinated in our own way. And so we all have our own baggage and our own story. And it's just, I think it's a blessing.
No.
And it's just to be able to hear everybody's story. You know, it's so cool. And again, it comes back to the fact that, you know, what we try to do at US Telehealth, and again, I think it's kind of the template or the mindset that I've set in place, is that every patient encounter is a chance to teach. And so the example is a guy comes in to the sick bay offshore because he's twisted his ankle, he stepped wrong off a stair. So we take care of that problem, you know, and then your blood pressure is 140 over 90. Have you ever had, you know, have you heard that before? Or, hey, when was the last time your lipids were checked? Or, you know, you're 52, have you had your colonoscopy yet? So every encounter should be an opportunity to teach and do some primary care. Have you had your flu shot yet?
Absolutely.
On and on and on. Yeah. So that, and again, I think it's just all about, you know, intentionality and time and whatnot. So, yeah, thank you, Beth. But that is what we're trying to do, at least, and I'm trying to do personally and professionally.
So I have a question. I'm going to put you on the spot here because this one is always, and you're a doctor and you've been around, And you've touched on so many good things just in a few minutes here. So the way the system is now, and I don't want to get on a soapbox or a rant or anything like that, but the way it is now, and you hit it perfectly. So someone goes in, someone like me who's in relatively good shape, and it's a quick visit. It might not even be 6 minutes, as you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
But so for the person that is going in and they know they're only going to get 5 or 6 minutes. How do we get the patient to ask the right questions of someone like you, as opposed to you just kind of dictating? So how do we educate them to go, hey, I have a doctor's appointment next Thursday. What do I need to ask my primary care physician? How do we break that barrier?
Well, depending on what their certain issues are, of course, that's what they ask. But I definitely encourage folks to keep a script, you know, literally to walk in there with a Cardex or a sheet of paper with questions on it and to politely refuse to leave until they're answered. And, you know, you kind of have to be a little bit of a squeaky wheel because, again, doctors are well-intentioned but just have a lot of things coming at them. And so your physician, she may already be thinking about the fact that she's got a patient waiting and, you know, that. But, you know, just come in to a visit with your questions asked. And I'll come back to maybe some suggestions for questions. But, you know, come in there with the script. In fact, you know, in the hospital setting, we always try and encourage our patients and their family members to write down any question, no matter how stupid it is. So, you know, if you're somebody who has regular health issues that need to be seen every 3 months, then just kind of keep a journal or on your cell phone, have a place to write questions. Oh, I need to ask Dr. Jones about that when I see her next time, you know, and ask about, I heard this on the radio, Dr. Jones, or, you know, what is the latest about breast cancer screening or prostate cancer screening? And, you know, and obviously things that are very germane to you, but, you know, ask those questions and have them written down and, you know, and then say, well, Dr. Clitter, I know you're in a hurry, but I have this one more question. And, you know, can you just give me a brief answer or tell me where to go? So I think patients shouldn't need to show up with the questions that are appropriate for them written down and get them answered, you know, kind of insist on it. You know, I think that sometimes we're intimidated by physicians with their white coat and their frantic lifestyle, but, you know, it's a teamwork. It's not the old days of Dr. Welby, you know, preaching to his, you know, patients and then moving on. I mean, there's still a role in that, but it's a team effort. It's your health. It's your body. Let's be a partner in that. And so that means we need to work together.
You know, one thing I do is I actually have a little kind of report card like you talked about from year to year when I go do my annual checkup. I have my blood pressure, my cholesterol, and I actually get to look at it from year to year. For the past 6 years, I've been doing that, and that's an amazing tool for me to look back and see what was working, what wasn't, what was I doing at that time, and train for a marathon or whatever I was doing. So that's a great idea.
Well, you know, I encourage people to keep food diaries. You know, so much of what we see, and again, I think it's just my own opinion, but I think it's borne out in the research. You know, a lot of things that we see, especially GI symptomatology, sleep problems, have to do with our diet. And so I will suggest that, you know, allergies, you know, and so I'll say keep a food diary, you know, keep a food diary and a symptom diary, and maybe on either side of a ledger type of, like, you know, a composition notebook from college. And on one side, say, okay, on Tuesday I ate this, and on Tuesday I felt this, and then on Wednesday I ate this, and on Wednesday I felt this. And you can even go, okay, on Tuesday I ate this, and on Wednesday I felt like this. And again, if you're Sherlock Holmes, or you don't have to be Sherlock Holmes, if you just kind of look, you'll see trends. Man, every time I eat fried food, I sleep terribly. Or every time I drink a big glass of milk, I have cramping, you know, or I have diarrhea. So, you know, a lot of those questions can be answered by the patient themselves, but it just takes a little bit of observational skills, you know, I guess the right term. But, yeah, that's right, Beth. Keep a graph of all your labs. And I'll say one more thing, which is not too much off topic, is one of my great beliefs with medical information is that, you know, medical records are yours. They're not mine. Your medical records are yours. And in my vision, and again, there's a lot of really smart people working on this, is that your health records don't belong to, you know, the county hospital or to Dr. Jones' office. They belong to you in the cloud. And then based on your fingerprint or your iris scan or whatever, your some type of biometrics, then anybody can access that. With your permission, you know, anybody can access that. When you're with them, you know, so that way that CAT scan that you had done in San Antonio 2 years ago when you had a headache is available to that doctor in California when you come in with another headache and go, well, remember 2 years ago it was okay. But so anyway, that's another big thing that we're trying to do in my current world, is to try and get people's records in their hands somehow. So anyway,
technology's an amazing thing, right?
Yeah. It is amazing, yet it can be very frustrating, you know, because of all the, you know, right now it's a very awkward time in digital health and digital medicine, and sometimes we get frustrated as physicians because it slows us down in certain ways, and it's, I think it's somewhat disruptive against that patient to doctor relationship too, in some ways for sure.
What do you do, Scott, to on a personal level? What do you do to stay in shape when you're not lathering up a piece of brisket out there in Texas? That sounds pretty good right now, brisket. When you're not as a doctor eating hush puppies and fried okra and ribs and cobbler, what are you doing to stay in shape? What kind of thing would you tell someone if they go, hey, you're a skinny doctor, what do you do?
Well, it's funny, Mark. Before I answer that question, this is something I tell people in the hospital all the time, again, in that kind of trying to just relate to them. And this is the true story, is that when you go into a doctor's dining room in any hospital in this country, the salad bar is relatively untouched, but the meatloaf and the fried tater tots are gone. And again, it's just human nature, and so it's true. And then, you know, of course, we all have stories about the smoking pulmonologist. You know, I think every doctor who's ever trained, probably, especially us older folks. You know, maybe the young ones not, but we all had pulmonary doctors who smoked. You know, it's like, what? How did that work? But anyway, so doctor, heal thyself, right? But no, I mean, personally, you know, and again, some of this actually I've learned over the years, and Beth has taught me some things too with her awesome information and knowledge. But I, you know, one of the things I do before I kind of get to my exercise regimen is I always try and take the stairs when I can in the hospital or here in the office, and I don't drive around looking for the closest parking spot. I'll just park far away because I feel like, you know, you can – even if you don't have time to run or do whatever you like to do, you can still walk a little extra, you know, up and down stairs and maybe park a little bit further away and, you know, maybe go for a lap around the hallways of your office building. So those are things I try and practice when I preach. But and personally, I like to run, and I just turned 50. I'm happy to say I still am running. Mm-hmm. I ran a half marathon the day after my three days before my birthday, but I try and I've done a couple of triathlons. I really like to swim, although I'm not very good at it. But the way I kind of look at it, Mark, is that, and this is just personal, but I share this with my patients, is that for me it's a mental health issue as much as anything. It's such a great stress reliever and to kind of disconnect from reality. And so I tell people that it's, you know, that it's important, obviously, for your body, but also for your mind. I like to run and swim and do a little bit of biking. And then I, you know, certainly like to stay active with my kids who are now older, but I try and do things with them. So, yeah, just kind of the usual stuff.
Are you more sore at 50 now?
No.
After
you know, I guess, you know, I think it's because I'm, and I think this, again, is thanks to some really smart people who have taught me, is that I'm better at stretching now and trying to do some more of that kind of thing as opposed to the way I used to be. So I think I'm less sore now. And I'd also, I think people can relate to this, is that, you know, and it obviously depends on where you are in life when you have kids, but we had three kids pretty close together. And so when they were younger, I wasn't as healthy because I was really working hard
really?
On my practice. And I was, you know, late nights with the babies and, you know, not having time to maybe work out as much as I wanted and maybe eating those French fries that were left over from their Happy Meal, which again is in our So I feel like I'm in better health now than I was, you know, 10 years ago. And, you know, maybe from Father Time standpoint, maybe there's things that have changed. But I feel good. And I tell people that all the time. I go, you know, it's never too late to start a healthy lifestyle. You know, it's never
Absolutely.
Too late.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned the stretching, because I always tell people stretching is the most underrated form of exercise there is. And I know if I'm stuck on time, that's the one thing that I'm not going to do. And I know it's so important. So I'm glad you mentioned that. So when I hit 50, I'm not going to be a sore. And, you know, just make sure you stretch. It's so important.
Well, Beth, you've really stressed to me how important yoga is in your life. And I don't do yoga as much as I like to or Pilates, but I'd like to start doing that more because I feel like also there's that mind-body connection with those type of endeavors.
So what, barefoot in the grass? Yeah, that's important too.
yeah, that's wonderful too. But yeah, Mark, I think, you know, again, I think that as I get older, I'll probably run less and walk, you know, and hike.
Right.
We're blessed in Austin with a lot of cool venues to go hiking, and I'll probably bike a little bit more too as I get older and, you know, want to take a little bit less impact off my joints. But knock on wood, so far so good with that. So I'm going to try and run as long as I can.
Now, Mark, your big thing is walking, right?
I tend to be, you know, a 5 to 6 mile a day walker when I'm feeling good. You know, and it helps having a dog that likes to walk. but,
shout out to Murray.
The dog is the demanding part of it. So he needs to go walk, but I always feel, you know, I'm one of those guys that I like the 10,000 steps, and I feel that if I'm at least walking a few miles a day, if I'm not doing anything else physically, I feel like I've gotten a pretty good workout by the end of the day. And I think what you touched on, Scott, is such a good common sense thing. Park a little farther away from the store. You know, walk around the hallway a little bit more. Mm-hmm. You know, stand up and stretch at your desk if you're working at a desk. I think those things are great. But I try to tell people things like walking for me is, it's kind of like brushing your teeth. I mean, it has to be a habit.
Yeah.
And absolutely. You wouldn't go a full day without brushing your teeth, probably. So you should probably walk a little bit every day too. So that's kind of what I think.
Well, let me ask you all a question, actually, because I'm just fascinated by this, but I haven't had a lot of time to investigate it. But tell me a little bit about the Fitbits of the world and those type of devices, because I think that's such a great way to remind you or to show you how many steps you've taken or that you have been sedentary for the past hour. Do y'all use those in your practice and your recommendations for patients and whatnot?
Oh, absolutely. I know. I mean, whether it's an iPhone or Fitbit or just old school writing down, when you see it in black and white, when you see it in words, when you see that, that is such an eye-opener for so many people. I mean, that's the moment where they're like, I had no idea I was so lazy, or I had no idea I was consuming 3,500 calories a day. And, I mean, yeah, absolutely, those are great tools. So whether it's a Fitbit or a phone or just writing it down.
Yeah, I do. Since most people, it seems, nowadays have an iPhone, I have the Health app on my iPhone, and that tracks every step. And I've said this before too. So, if I get to the end of the day and I've only, you know, taken 6,500 steps and my goal is to kind of be around 10,000, I tell people that I have homework that night. So that might mean standing up and then walking in place, watching TV instead of just sitting. So it's a nice reminder. It's a nice reminder, I think.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's a great idea.
You know, one question that I have is, we all know that childhood obesity is such a big topic and the trend is only getting worse. I'm sure you've seen kids and teenagers and adolescents what advice do you give those parents for getting children motivated to lose weight? I mean, you don't want to shame them, but
yeah.
I mean, what's the best way to reach those parents?
Wow, that's a great question, Beth. You know, I'm fascinated by that topic just because I know now, you know, there's been studies that have shown that even young folks in their 20s are developing coronary disease and certainly fatty liver or non-alcoholic steatohepatitis, which is could potentially become an epidemic. And even in people who are not that overweight, by the way, and again, as the name implies, not alcohol, you know, drinkers. So young people are starting themselves off in a bad way. And I think, you know, and I know this is something that's, you know, y'all know about, but I think, you know, sugar, I think fructose, you know, I think it's danger of sugar. And I tell you, one of my, I've never met the gentleman, but I tell people to watch his YouTube video, but there's a professor of endocrinology, pediatric endocrinology, I believe, at UCSF in, you know, San Francisco named Robert Lustig, L-U-S-T-I-G, and he's got a great YouTube video about, you know, about sugar being a poison, if you will, and it's just a tape recorded talk, but I really do, what I tell parents is the thing you can do right off the bat is to get the sugar out of the house as much as possible and to say no in a loving way to sugar, you know, and again, I know it's hard because kids crave it, but I think that's a big deal, and certainly I know that that's probably the best bang for your buck is just to work on cutting simple carb intake in kids, and then, you know, certainly maybe turning the game cube off or whatever, you know, or the PlayStation off and go outside and do things. That's certainly, but I think dietary is a big deal.
Oh yeah, I am. One of my mottos in life is sugar is the devil's poison, and I absolutely, and it's in everything nowadays. Everything.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's Dr. Lustig who says it in his talk, but I've heard it also before. Is that, you know, the only place you find fructose in nature is in fruit, and you know, it has fiber attached to it, so that you don't absorb it right away. Like with orange juice or a Coke or, you know, a cupcake, you know. So instead of having it all hit your liver at one time, you know, in your pancreas, and you slowly absorb it, you know, so that your body can handle it and use it in the way it's supposed to be used. And, you know, there's this hormone called leptin, L-E-P-T-I-N, which has got a lot of interest in his research and others, but it's just fascinating. So, you know, the whole idea is that if sugar intake early in the day will increase your appetite later in the day, even if, you know, just because it affects on your appetite centers of your brain. So just fascinating stuff. So, yes, and again, I'm not a pediatrician, but obviously I still see kids and young teenagers in my practice, and I think that that's a great idea is just to kind of identify sugar as being a culprit that you are, you know, trying to get it out of the diet as much as possible.
You know, and getting kids
easier said than done, of course.
Right,
sure.
And getting into activities that are social and fun and that build self-esteem. I know when I was young, my parents got me into dance and gymnastics probably to give me an avenue for my crazy energy that I had, but this actually empowered me, and I'm actually doing what I do for a living because of that. So
yeah.
I think getting kids active, too, like you said, get them off the couch and outside.
Absolutely, yeah. And again, I come back to what I tell people is I just think that, you know, you can – look at exercise as a chore, or as Mark said, you can look at it as a habit, just like brushing your teeth or anything else. You know, it's just, it's so important, I think, to our well-being. And again, not just physical, but probably mental, and at least in my opinion, it is. And
your dad was a dentist, right? So
Yeah. I certainly, you know, I was actually taught this by my dad, but also one of my professors in med school in Houston many years ago was look at a patient's teeth to give you insight to how they overall view their health, you know. It's fascinating,
really?
Actually. So, yeah.
I've never heard that.
Well, there's all this data now that if you have chronic gingivitis, if you have chronic inflammation of your gums because you don't brush or floss regularly and you eat too much sugar, that inflammation releases inflammatory mediators that potentially could make cholesterol plaque in your arteries unstable. And there's a theory that actually may increase your risk of a heart attack because of those, you know, and the inflammatory mediators, you know, and whatnot. So, you know, oxidation and all the things we hear about with antioxidants. So, yeah, good oral health, I think, is also something that's important and probably overlooked and not stressed enough by physicians, you know. And again, I actually talked to somebody with Shell this last week, I guess, about how many people we see offshore that have dental problems. And again, that's just not high on the totem pole for some of these guys is to brush their teeth. And so we send a lot of people in for dental issues. They have so much bad pain because of cavities. So that's another issue, you know. So
I never thought of that.
Yeah, interesting.
Well, Scott, we are running out of time. I know you are a guy that brushes your teeth, so we appreciate the time and all the insight, and always good to catch up with you. Thanks for, I mean, we probably could end up talking for 3 or 4 hours, so but we appreciate you coming on and taking some time, and this was really, really good insight for all our listeners out there, so thanks so much.
Mark, it's my pleasure, and what y'all are doing is fantastic, and just anytime I'd be happy to help out anyway, and I love listening to y'all because I learned a lot too, so thank you very much.
Well, thank
all right.
you.
All right, Scott, thanks so much. Have a great day, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
Hey, this is Mel D, and on behalf of the Atlanta Life Radio team, we thank all of our faithful listeners. If this is your first time tuning in, we thank you. Please share our information with a friend and also come back. A special thank you to all of our financial sponsors, because without their financial support, this show would not be made possible. If you are interested in becoming a financial sponsor or would like to learn how to advertise with us, please send our station manager an email complete with your contact information to info, that's I-N-F-O, at AtlantaLifeRadio.com. And now we return back to our program. Mark?
Oh, welcome back. Beth, that was a good interview. Scott,
I know.
Isn't he do a good job? Isn't that just so interesting when you kind of peel back the layers and talk about different things with patients and wellness? You really could talk about that all day long, huh?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I find it fascinating. I find it just really interesting. And Scott, I've known him for years. He's an incredible doctor, so I'm so thankful he agreed to help us out with this interview.
Yeah, we're gonna get to a couple emails here in a second, and hopefully maybe a couple calls here as we wrap things up here in the second half hour. But for those of you just tuning in, you can always follow us on Twitter, ALR Radio. Also like us on Facebook. And if you do have an email question, goinggymfree@gmail.com. And if you want to call in and chat with Beth and myself, the number is 347-324-5246, and press 1, and we'll get you on the air. Also, check out the website. You can follow us and listen to us online at AtlantaLifeRadio.com. You want to do some emails, Beth? You want me to read some emails, and you want to?
Absolutely, I love this.
You
want
to take a shot at some of this stuff? Okay, so
I guess
this one just came in, and I'm going to turn it over to you because you're smarter than I am.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the question: is it better to eat a meal before or after a workout?
Okay. If I have to preface by saying, if you have 10 trainers, you're going to get 10 different ideas and 10 different recommendations. But what I encourage people is actually to eat both, and here's why. Like back in the old days, people thought they should train on an empty stomach in order to burn more fat, but that's not the case. The fact is your body needs some blood sugar for fuel, and in addition, what it can use from stored fat when you're working out. So if you don't have any blood sugar available, your body will eat your muscle glycogen. Plus, a low blood sugar will also make you tired and sluggish during your exercise session. So I suggest you eat something small, maybe like 45 minutes to an hour before training, nothing too heavy, not a lot of liquid. You're going to have more endurance, more energy to work harder. You're going to burn more calories. You're going to improve your muscle tone. And then after training, which you know as a trainer, there's this period known as the golden hour, which is like 45 to 60 minutes after a workout. This is when your muscles absorb the most nutrients and it's replaced more efficiently. So you don't have to have a huge meal again, just something that contains a little protein, a little carb, maybe a 2-to-1 ratio, and that's going to give you the best results.
What about when can we have the slathered brisket sandwich? Is that?
I don't know. We're going to have to call Scott back up and ask him that.
That was great that he mentioned that. And It should be noted too that in the world that we can have a slathered brisket sandwich every now and again, right? Can't we, Beth? Can't we have a brisket sandwich every now and again?
No, of course you can.
No.
I love to eat. I mean, I have a sweet tooth, and what good is life if you can't enjoy a cupcake or cookie or a brisket or whatever your poison is? But yeah, just moderation. Absolutely, moderation.
Okay, yeah. let's get to another one, and I'm going to turn this back over to you again. So here's the email. When I'm doing cardio, my target heart rate is supposed to be at 85%. How do I know, or do I know what that number is, and how do I measure it during my workout? Good question.
Mm-hmm. And this is actually a pretty common question. Before I answer that, I would ask that if you're on medication for a heart condition or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor first, because your healthy target range may be a little bit different than you expect. But for most of us, to determine your target heart rate, you should figure out what your maximum heart rate is first, and that's done by subtracting your age from 220. So, for example, if you're 32, 220 minus 32 is going to be 188. So your maximum heart rate is going to be 188. Then you take 85% of 188, which gives you 160. So that's the ideal number your heart should be beating in 1 minute when you're training for your target heart rate. And the easiest way to do that is by wearing a heart rate monitor. And a lot of treadmills or EFXs or bikes have those actually built in. Or, good old-fashioned, you find your pulse. So you either on your wrist or your neck, count the number of times your heart beats in 6 seconds and then multiply that by 10. So, I mean, I do have to say that keeping your heart rate at 85% is kind of tough at first. If you're new at this, if you're starting to work out, don't get discouraged. You know, work your way up to it. There'll be times when your heart rate gets up to 100% of your, you know, maximum heart rate. You know, if that happens, don't worry. It's not unhealthy. It's just really difficult to sustain that for 30 to 60 minutes of cardio. And that's why 85% is kind of the magic number for cardio training.
Don't you think, and this isn't part of the email, but I'm going to ask you anyway. I'm going to put you on the spot sometimes, Beth. Do you think 60 minutes of cardio maybe for the person just kind of starting and kind of getting off the couch and getting moving and starting a program is 60 minutes? I'm a walker, so I would think it's okay. But 60 minutes in the gym, you know, at a higher level of a treadmill or an elliptical, is that too much? Is that going to overwhelm someone in the beginning, that length of time, you think?
That's a great question. I'm going to say it's up to the person. I mean, for the average person or for someone who is really just starting off and has never exercised, absolutely. But I think, you know, for the athletes, if they just kind of have been lazy for a couple of years, I think 60 minutes of cardio is very, you know, I mean, realistic. They can do that. I mean, do I want them to go out and run for those 60 minutes? No. But like you said, walking, hiking, biking, 60 minutes I don't think would be too much. But again, that's so individualized. That's why I think everybody needs a gentle dentist and a good trainer. So, yeah.
Right.
That's
good. Here's another one, and this one's interesting to me too, because I'll get asked this one on occasion. I've tried every diet under the sun in my life. Boy, haven't we all? And I'm really afraid I've ruined my metabolism. I seem to gain weight no matter what I eat now. Is there any way to fix this? And I'm going to say something, and then I'll turn it over to you, Beth. You know, it's funny. Years ago, I had a kidney stone, and I remember going in and talking to my doctor about that. I was like, is it my diet? You know, I try to stay in shape. And he said, Mark, you know, when the Atkins diet was popular with all the protein, the protein was tough on the kidneys. So that, you know, and again, I say this, and I'm not a doctor. This was, I'm relaying the message. And I remember him saying, you know, that was real popular, but when that during that time, he was seeing a lot of patients because of the harshness on the kidneys. And then I would ask him about other diets, and he would, there was never, you know, you probably, just like you were saying before, you'd probably get 10 different answers from 10 different trainers. But where I kind of stand on this, and then I'm going to let you take over. I've always been kind of more common sense. I realize that, you know, you're going to eat some carbohydrates, but make sure you have some green on your plate, and maybe instead of the white pasta all the time, you go with the wheat pasta. I tend to be more of that guy, and of course, a lot of things that go along with this are portion sizes. So, where do you stand on that? Because there are so many different diets, and how do we know which one is right for each one of us? That's a tough one, isn't it?
It is, and I have to tell you, I get this question every day. I really do every day, and
right.
I'm so glad that someone emailed this, because it's such a good question, and so many people have this question. And again, so many people suffer from the backlash that can result from years of yo-yo diets or fad diets. What's the diet of the year? And Atkins, it makes me cringe when I hear people talk about it. But this is what happens to your body. When people let their calorie levels drop too low, their body's survival mechanism kicks in, and it lowers their basal metabolic rate. So when they go off that crash diet or that fad diet and they start to begin eating normally again, the weight can come back on and then some, and what follows, another crash diet. And it's just a cycle. And it's really frustrating for everybody. I mean, even people in the medical and the wellness world, we deal with this. But it can be reversed in time, consistency, and patience. What I tell people to do is you need to do what I call shocking the metabolism. You have to allow your body time to adapt to the new metabolic set point by being consistent, and you're going to force your body to adapt. So I have a game plan if you want to hear it. You want to hear it?
Yeah. No.
Okay.
The floor is yours, Senator. Go ahead.
Well, I like that. Okay. First, you're going to set your calorie intake at 12 calories per pound of body weight. So let's say you weigh 117 pounds. You're going to take 117 times 12, and that would be 1,404 calories a day. Stick like that to glue. Just stick it for at least 1 month. And this is going to allow your body time to readjust the metabolic set point accordingly. And here's another part of the equation. The absolute best way to pump up your metabolism is to exercise. So I know I said this last week, but you're going to be burning more calories not only during your workout, but also up to 48 hours after, which is called the afterburn. So exactly. Just go ahead. If you're in that yo-yo diet plan and you're in the cycle and you can't lose weight, you can't. You have to really help your body and with the metabolism, and those are the two things.
That's pretty – no, I like that. Hey. You know what else I wanted to mention, because we're wrapping up, and I kind of look at this as a, and maybe you have a fitness tip of the week, but you know, okay. You know how I talk a lot about walking, how I like to walk. Well, you might get people that don't enjoy walking, or the younger, you know, people in their 20s, I don't really get to work out, but I discovered a few months ago, I began rucking. And you have to be careful when you say that word. But it is putting up, wearing a backpack. And uh-huh. So a lot of days I will do my workout, and I'll put books in a backpack and maybe put 20, 25, 30 pounds. I'll gauge it. And it just adds even more so to just your regular walk. So from a fitness standpoint, if I go do 2 miles or 2.5 miles, 3 miles with a dog, sometimes it's kind of nice. If I want that added burn, I'll just throw a backpack on. And it's a simple but really, really good workout. Would you ever do something like that? Because it's pretty cool. I like it.
You know what? When I come out to San Diego to see you, I will do that. But, okay I'm going to tell you, I'm going to be honest, I think I feel goofy doing that. I'm sorry.
Well, look. If you're like me and you've got the 80s music going on the phone, okay, all right, and you're listening to you're listening to Hall & Oates wearing an old baseball hat, then you're not really worried about what people think about you wearing a backpack.
Absolutely.
Remember, this is about being healthy. It's not about the appearance while we work out.
That is true. Duly noted. That's exactly.
Do you have a fun little workout? I don't mean to put you on the spot, but do you have like a fun little workout tip that, you know, the average Joe could go do and find it cool that they might not know about? Do you have anything like that or no?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I commit to exercising every day. Do I? No, but I commit to it. But what I do is I check with my body what I need. And that means being present and checking my energy levels. Like if I'm – and really zoning in on this. So if I want to feel strong, I'm going to lift weights. If I feel really like open and organic, or if I'm sore, I'm going to do some yoga. If I want to feel super energized, I'm going to go for a run or attack some stairs. And if I'm irritated, maybe I'll just go outside and go for a hike. So really I just commit to exercising, but I'm more than that, I commit to what my body needs, because I don't want to run every day. And, I want to put a backpack on and check this out and see what kind of workout I can get. So that's the tip of the day, of the week. So
You should put a backpack on.
I'm motivated now.
It will change your life. This was, you know what, this was a good, we're getting ready to wrap up. This was a good hour. This was week two, and I like the direction of the show. And I know that maybe next week we're going to try to get, you know, some people on, some success stories. I know we have a couple people already on our schedule, but it might be nice to squeeze in some other people as well. So we're kind of finding our way here, but I'm having a great time with this, because I think this information is really powerful. And, you know, our guests have been terrific. So I think the more we can get out to people, the better. So I'm pretty happy. What about you?
Oh, absolutely. And oh my gosh. I mean, you're such a great friend and you have so much energy, and I just need to learn how to slow down my speech. So that's what I'm working on in this.
You're fine. So we are going to wrap up week two. Thanks so much for checking us out. And again, all of those things, follow us on Twitter, ALR Radio, and again, goinggymfree@gmail.com. AtlantaLifeRadio.com for updates on the show. That's going to do it from California and from Texas. Again, we know the weather's a problem. Stay safe out there, and we will see you back here next week. Have a great week, everyone. Stay healthy and stay well.